All right, hour number two on Thursdays, we kick it off with Hail Varsity's Jacob Zilla, who joins us now. You know, I keep promoting this. Have you, you've officiated a basketball game before, correct?
One, kind of.
How do you say kind of?
Well, so I was running the scoreboard for the Holy Ghost third and fourth grade tournament, and the refs didn't show up for one of the games, so I had to step in and ref a third grade game. And it kind of went okay, I guess.
Yeah, that's a little bit rough of a level to officiate. At least it was third grade. It could have been second or first graders, and I think you probably would have just walked away and never come back.
Well, the thing about that is you don't have to do a ton of officiating at that age. Just don't let the kids steal the ball out of each other's hands. If they take 30 steps and call the travel, otherwise kind of let it go, and make sure they inbound the ball when they're supposed to.
And then say, all right, that's a travel. No, that's not a travel. 4 steps, probably we have to call that.
As long as you don't pick it up and run it directly to the basket, I think in general they kind of let it go. Or if you pick it up and dribble, and then pick it up, and then dribble, and then pick it up, and dribble. Eventually, they're going to call it. You got to learn to pass the ball, but it's interesting. I've kept score for second grade games, so definitely a different sport.
This isn't going to be the focus of our chat, but it's on the heels of Angel Hernandez, who is in the sport that you don't pay a lot of attention to, which is fine, baseball. He had another bad night in Kansas City last night, and he might be the worst official in any sport going right now. But it's kind of led to the discussion about officiating, about why people stay with it or why they start and then they're out of it and they never want to come back, or in some cases how difficult it is. But just the whole umbrella of officiating in this country, which is leading to shortages regardless of sport, that is it's very nerve-wracking for people that have to schedule tournaments, athletic directors or people that run organizations. I know you spent a lot of time in basketball. I can always tell your mood. You'll make a comment on Twitter, or I see you, you know, about officials, but you're not over the top. If you could fix officiating in basketball, or you were the czar or the head of officiating in basketball, where would you start to make it easier on the men and women that officiate, or some tweaks that would help people that officiate and people that coach, people that play, people that watch?
Oh man, that's tough, and I don't know what the answer is, unfortunately. I guess the easiest thing would be to add, depending on the level, to add an extra official. I know a lot of times, like for AAU tournaments, for like the big championship games or the feature games, sometimes they'll schedule 3 for a court, but most of the time you're rolling with 2. And so maybe if you add one, it'll be a little easier. They won't miss as much. They'll catch more. That's tough financially and scheduling wise. If they're shorthanded, it's hard to find 3 for, mm-hmm. A game. I think there are probably some way, like I haven't gone through an actual, officiating even a clinic or anything, like learn the way that they're taught, but I think that might be somewhere that there could be some changes just based on the way that I see things called. It seems to me like just the process isn't great, that leads to some of the missed calls and some of the way games go, like right now I think mm-hmm. the charge block, just based on the way it's called, I think the way it's taught to be called is broken, and I think that needs to be reassessed. So maybe there are some things like that, like you could reevaluate the way that they go about teaching. Maybe there's something in the rules that you could clarify or tweak or whatever to make it a little simpler or easier. But ultimately, I think the problem is just kind of human nature of the fans, and there's not really a lot you can do to change that, unfortunately, outside of just trying to keep putting the message out there. It's like these are real people, and abusing them isn't going to make them any better at their jobs. It's going to make them quit. Because like you said, like I'm pretty hard on officials at times, but like I've never been abusive. I've gotten one technical in my entire life, and I didn't even deserve that. So like, there are definitely times where they deserve a lot of criticism, but it's also a tough job, and it's not like they're trying to get it wrong. I think there's definitely times where they could put in better effort. And like the thing that drives me nuts the most, like, yeah, you mentioned the getting over half court, but like that's obvious. Like the one where officials don't rotate throughout the game. Mm-hmm. So you got basically the same guy on your half of the court the entire game. And if that guy's calling it differently than his partner, that becomes a problem. So like that's part of your job. You're supposed to be rotating throughout the game. So that's the one that drives me nuts. But like I said, I don't know that there is any one thing that they could do to really change it. It's just going to have to be kind of incremental changes and hope that people aren't as terrible as they often are.
Do you have any former players that you've coached that are officiating now?
Even
youth games at OSA or things like that?
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Because I think former players are our next group of trying to encourage to get into the sport, get into the profession.
Yeah, I definitely think that's right. Those guys kind of have the base of understanding, obviously. Typically in a little bit better shape to keep up with high-paced game. They've heard some abuse in their life, most likely, too, just from being coached. So... I think that definitely is probably a community worth, because I think former coaches and former players are probably the target audience. Because I thought about back when my brother graduated, I wasn't sure if I was going to keep coaching. I thought about getting into it, but then I ended up did get back into coaching. So I never committed to it. And I know Chad, the AD over at Holy Ghost, once his son went through and he wasn't coaching him anymore, he went through the training and became an official too. So I think that could be another kind of target market for adding to the official ranks is former coaches, because obviously they've been on the other side of it. And you think like going into it, like, hey, I won't make the same mistakes that drive me nuts. I'll try to be better. So I think that's a good point.
Let's shift some basketball. We're going to talk to Darren Hanson coming up at noon, and there's a little bit more pep in his step because Akola Rope committed to Nebraska or Omaha today. He signed his letter of intent on his transfer from Nebraska. It's been a while since we've seen the great Akola when he was playing at Creighton Prep. Goes to Nebraska. He got to play a lot more at the end of the year as a freshman and then suffered the knee injury. What do you think Omaha is getting from Akola if Akola is healthy and ready to go?
Just a freak athlete that's going to play hard. I think we even saw a little bit in the stretches that he played for Nebraska. With his length and athleticism, it was just kind of a tough fit. He was kind of trying to find where he could fit in and make an impact, and I think it's less important like that he be a true wing at Omaha, where a true perimeter player, like at 6'6", long arms, his athleticism, he can play a little bit 3-4 kind of tweener, like he has been, and still has some success. So I think he's a guy that's going to fit in really well in an up-tempo system. He's going to fit in well with team that allows him to get on run and maybe set some picks and roll to the rim, getting some lobs. He's just a guy that I think, I don't know that he'll ever be a 20 point per game scorer in college, but I absolutely believe that he can be an important player and a valuable player with his athleticism and as hard as he plays and all the little things that he can do on a court.
And he'll be a good fit in that league with the athleticism and you know how that league is starting to grow. It's a big pickup. It's been a long journey. They've recruited him for a long time. Even You know, they were right there at the end when he decided to go to Nebraska, and it kind of stuck with him. And, you know, I'm glad to hear, because there was part of me that thought, okay, maybe a Cole doesn't want to play basketball anymore. He's got other interests. But, you know, he has a commitment. He wants to be good. He wants to play basketball again. And I think he found a good home for him after, you know, Nebraska, where he was starting, as you know, got recruited over, you know, and got recruited and brought by Tim Miles. Fred gave him a chance. And then Fred was very complimentary when, you know, I said, hey, they'll help you find a place. But let's talk about, let's shift to Nebraska, because we're going to get to Creighton as well, because there's a lot of these tie-ins about recruiting. What is Nebraska going to have? Is there any limit on Nebraska's roster, do you think? It just seems like every day or every other day they're adding a new piece to the 21-22 roster.
Well, the limit is one more player if they choose to reach it. I think what happened here with Quarren McPherson is once Shamil Stevenson decided to move on, they kind of had that roster spot, and he's a guy that they were recruiting for a while, but I don't think that they made the push to land the commitment yet. And then once Stevenson decided to move on, they're like, okay, we've got some space here. Let's go see if he's interested. And that's kind of what happened with Elijah Wood last year, is once Kobe King decided not to come to Nebraska, they had the scholarship to play with, and they had been recruiting Wood as a 2021 kid because he was planning to do a prep year. So they went to him and said, hey, we got space for you now, and he accepted it. So I think it's kind of a similar deal here where, okay, here's a kid they like. Let's get him into the program. Let's see what he can do. Add a little bit of depth in that backcourt, and then kind of let it work itself out. So, yep, they're back up to 14 players. They could still technically add one more if they want to, because Kobe Webster and Trevor Lake's scholarships don't count. But kind of hard to keep in 15 scholarship players happy. So I don't know that that's something that they necessarily want to do. And keeping that scholarship for potential mid-year transfer is never a bad idea if you've got the depth otherwise.
Now let's go to Creighton. And I saw you tweeted out, I said it on air right when it happened, because I've seen quite a bit of Northwest Missouri State basketball over the last couple of years. Ben does a really good job down there in their national championship program, and they've got some local flavor as well. In a weird year where everybody gets a free year, I love that Ryan Hawkins, who is from Atlantic, Iowa, is familiar with Creighton, goes, not highly recruited out of high school, went to an excellent Division II program, proved himself, and now he's got his free year to go say, hey, I think I can play Division I basketball, and for what I do at 6'7", especially shooting out beyond the arc, this seems to be an ideal fit. They have a spot open. Why not have a marriage here? I really like this connection for Ryan Hawkins to say yes to Creighton to be part of this upcoming year roster. And then the other question, Jacob, is we get so much into the transfer portal and the junior college, but what about the Division II player? Because there's some other local players. Ty Carroll was at, Missouri Western? And he's looking to transfer out of there after he proved himself there. Are we going to see maybe more Division II players that say, I got 1 year, I can transfer, I want to see if I can play Division I, or I should have gone to Division I to begin with?
Yeah, and I think we have in recent years. Actually, once Trevor Lakes came in Nebraska, I went through and wrote a story on Hale Varsity on just kind of the success and kind of the track record of guys that have made the leap from D2 to D1. And there's no doubt that there are guys that fall through the cracks, and or even guys that develop once they get to that level and have the ability to play at the division. I mean, they're like Northwest Missouri State is as a team is better than a lot of low major teams, I would say. Just because they've got the D2 label doesn't mean it's that much of a difference. Especially with the kind of the ease of transferring now, I think it's becoming more and more of a viable option. Guys are thinking more about it. And even with Hawkins this year, it's, he's the guy that he gave Northwest Missouri State 5 years. So he's taking advantage of that extra year that's kind of unique to this time period to go take a chance and go play closer to home. and go play for a system that he should thrive in. And that's kind of the cool thing here too, is like this Vermont indication is it's a case where once he started thinking about it, it's like he kind of surveyed the landscape before he even entered the portal, and it's like Creighton, like he saw Creighton as kind of the place he wanted to go. Then he went in the portal, he kind of talked to some people and said, no, that's it. That's where I want to go. And so it was fortunate for Creighton. I think he fits a big need, both in terms of just talent and experience and kind of position fit, get a little bit more experience there. So it's huge for Creighton, and it's definitely an avenue that schools are going to continue to monitor.
Now let's shift to football. This is the first time we've gotten you since the spring game, which we were both at to wrap up spring ball. There's question marks. There's feel goods of going into the fall. Let's start here. What position group coming into spring and now what's happened during the spring 15 practices are you the least concerned about 112 days away from the start of the season?
That's a good one. Well, I might have said inside linebacker before the Will Honus injury. I still think they'll be pretty solid there, but you lose your most experienced player. That's going to hurt, even though I like the depth there. Cornerback, you feel really good about Cam Taylor-Britt, and I like the experience of the other guys, but they haven't really done it yet consistently. Quentin Newsome and Braxton Clark have played, but neither one has started for a full season. So I think maybe safety or defensive line, I guess, are the ones that return everybody. Mm-hmm. And you like the starters, you like the young guys that are kind of pushing behind them. So I think those are probably the two that I feel best about right now. Because I think every other position for the most part has at least one spot that you kind of have a question about that. Yeah, maybe you like the guys that are doing there, but it's unproven at this point.
All right. Now the most concerned.
well,
it can be more than one.
The running back was the one that kind of like throughout the spring, I liked what I saw in the spring game, and I was kind of excited by everything. Basically, everybody that took a handoff showed something. So I don't know that I know any more about that room, about like how it's going to shake out, but I feel a little bit better than I did going into the spring game just about what they've got here. Because we were excited about some of these guys coming in, and then last year, obviously, Savion Morrison couldn't even get on the field. Marvin Scott didn't really have any success when he did get on the field. Ronald Tompkins was in and out, showed a couple things, and then kind of disappeared for a while. So you didn't really know what any of these guys can do. And I think you add Marquis Steph and Ramir Johnson to the group, you should be able to put together a backcourt rotation that can get, or a backfield rotation that can get it done. It's just a matter of who are those players going to be. I don't know that, I guess maybe the quarterback, just in general, and you don't want to pick nits in the spring game, obviously. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get too excited. You don't want to get too low about anything you saw, but I kind of wrote it, my column went a day late this week and put it up today. And that was kind of one of my questions is what kind of quarterback play is Nebraska going to get? And a lot of that was focused on the backups, and I thought both guys showed something, but neither one was able to put together a complete performance that you could really get excited about. But also with Adrian Martinez too, and even in that the brief time that he played, and even with the altered rules or whatever, you still saw a little bit of the stuff that you hope that he would be able to fix. Whether it's the backwards pass out of bounds, the throwaway. Mm-hmm. Kind of one of those little things, like you just, a quarterback can't let that happen. I don't care how windy it is or whatever, you got to throw that thing forward. And then the kind of stalling out in the end zone after their first touchdown drive, and kind of the rocket pass that he put just out of reach of Omar Manning in the end zone. That's kind of an area where Nebraska has struggled is executing in the end zone, whether it's the quarterback, whether it's the receiver. Those guys just haven't been able to get on the same page in the red zone very often. And we saw it again with that red team going against the second team offense. Not even, or second team defense, rather. So I guess you could put that one there. I feel pretty good about the wide receiver group. I think there's a lot to be excited about there. They still got to go out and prove it. Kind of the same thing with the offensive line. Obviously, you're bringing some guys back. You got some young guys there, but I like the potential there, and I think it's a group that's going to get better as the season goes on. And then, obviously, on defense, you're kind of returning a lot. And most of the players and even the guys that are filling in there have some experience under the belt. So I guess that's going to kind of ran through the whole roster there, but I think I answered your question somewhere.
Well, then there's another part, and Jacob was alluding to his column he's got up on Hail Varsity right now, Padding the Stats, which is a very in-depth analysis of things. One of the questions you posed was, how does Nebraska generate a pass rush? So if we're looking at most concerned, you know, you look at outside linebackers, you look at defensive ends, and you know the past history of Nebraska's had struggles getting to the quarterback and getting them on the ground while they're in the pocket. Just because guys are a year older and there might be a new player in Gunnarsson and a year older with Payne where he can just focus on football, is there anything that signifies that Nebraska will be better at generating a pass rush?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything that signifies it outside of hope and kind of continued progression from a player like Caleb Tanner, and kind of alluded to it too, like if Tanner and Garrett Nelson and those guys, if they don't step up, maybe you go with the young guys. I think guys like Blaze Gunnarsson are kind of pushing. They're ready to make some noise and at least make a case for playing time. That Blaze was kind of one of the guys that stood out to me a little bit. In that game, he had a sack, had a couple other tackles, made some nice plays. Jamari Butler got in there and got a sack in a quarterback hurry. Those are the two guys that freshmen coming in last year that kind of looked the part. They're just inexperienced, and now they've got a year under their belt in the program. Maybe they'll kind of push some of those older guys. It'll be interesting. I wonder. Last year they went a lot to the two defensive linemen front, and then playing an outside linebacker as the kind of the third guy on the line. I don't know if I love that, especially with their depth and talent on the defensive line. I'd like to get those guys more out on the edge and give them a chance to get after the quarterback. I'm kind of curious about what went into that decision making to kind of go more that direction. And then also, I'd like to see Jodrell Doman used more as a pass rusher and give him a chance to go make some plays behind the line of scrimmage, because he's got a knack for that. But they used him so much as a coverage guy this past year that I think he went from 2.5 sacks 2 years ago to not really kind of producing any this past year. But that's because he was dropping back and playing more than nickel versus getting after the quarterback. So I think those are a couple of just schematic things and role things that I wonder if they might change, or if they're going to stick with that, kind of what are they hoping to get out of that, going with kind of a smaller, quicker group. But I guess I wonder what the trade-off is, kind of what are they getting out of going that way.
It's been a discussion since Randy Gregory walked away from campus. Let me pose this one to you. So if Nebraska is better at generating a pass rush, whether they be, it doesn't always have to be sacks, but pressures, hits, will it be because of the guys have developed that's what they're tasked with? Or will it be because Nebraska's cornerbacks are going to be so good in press man coverage that the quarterback's going to have to hold the ball a little bit longer, thus the possibility of getting hit, getting pressured, getting sacked, throwing a turnover? Which one is it, the chicken and the egg discussion here?
Well, yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, but also, like, I think Nebraska's had some good coverage the last couple years, and it still hasn't necessarily led to a big sack number. So I think it'll be more on the improvement of the front seven and those guys kind of figuring things out, because I think you've had some opportunities for covered sacks that guys just haven't been able to get there. Cause, I mean, how many times has Nebraska given up third down conversions where you just weren't able to finish the play? And so hopefully, I think maybe you feel good about Quinn Newsome. I think you feel really good about Cam Taylor-Britt and what he's going to be able to do this year. So I think you can hope for more good coverage, but you can only cover so long, and guys have to be able to get home and finish plays.
Well, this will be the point of the conversation that I'll just throw it out there, and then I'll step back, and then you and George can discuss this. It's been a week now. It was not going on when we talked last Thursday. How's your feeling on Aaron Rodgers right now? Because as I look at both TV sets here in the studio, one is talking about Aaron Rodgers, the other is talking about the Rangers and the Capitals last night fighting. But don't worry. ESPN will go right back to Aaron Rodgers here in just a little bit. Adam Schefter talked this morning that he was the one that sat down and got the information. How you feeling a week later about Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know. I haven't necessarily been sorting through each and every report recently. There's just so much. It's just kind of interesting that once Schefter went out with the report, suddenly everybody had a source and there were leaks all over the place. Like some of the reports just haven't made any sense. So I'm kind of at the point now. It's like, whatever happens, I'll wait until kind of the end and then decide how I'm going to feel. Just kind of once all, this is all sorted out for real, because I just don't know what to actually believe. And I'm not going to run with every single report. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'm just kind of, just wait until there's a resolution here. I'm not going to get too worked up. It's frustrating that they put themselves in this situation. I'm not going to get too worked up until there's absolutely a reason to.
Well, there's no breaking news yet, so you're good. Well, if you haven't seen the Adam Schefter discussion on how this story came out last week, I was wondering who leaked the story. Was it the Rodgers camp or was it Green Bay? I think we know that it's going to take a lot to reel Aaron Rodgers back in. Jacob, as always, I appreciate it. Thanks for the insight. Good stuff on Hail Varsity from the spring game. And I know there will be much more as we work our way through the offseason.
All right. Thanks.
That's Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity. Did you not wonder that yesterday? That who was the timing on? The timing, was it the Packers? Was it Aaron Rodgers? I mean, Aaron Rodgers knows the kind of impact he has on Green Bay and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
That it had to be his leak, right? I mean, would Green Bay really want to leak something like that?
No. Not at all. They would want to keep that one in-house.
But the timing, I think the timing came out of the Rodgers camp. Had a little being upset and letting it be out there and dominating the headlines. Because he knows what kind of an impact he has on Green Bay and what kind of an impact he has on the NFL. And he wanted people in the draft to react.
Yeah.
Wanted people to say, you're available? Really?
Doesn't that give him leverage as well?
Mm-hmm. Oh, he has a lot of leverage here.
Yeah.
He has a lot of leverage here. This whole thing just seems like a public message board discussion that's going on nationally. Different stories. Hey, I got a guy. This is what's happening. Hey, I talked to him this past weekend. He's disgruntled, but he may come back. Who do you think has the best quarterback situation in the NFC North right now? Not the best quarterback physically, but the best situation. Is it crazy enough to say that it's the Chicago Bears?
Yeah.
That they just got the man that might cure the quarterback woes in Chicago. You got Minnesota, which still has a lot of money to pay Kirk Cousins. Doesn't seem like they're all excited. Detroit has Jared Goff. The Packers may or may not have Rodgers. If they do, they're the best in the division. If not, yeah. That the Bears on the 6th of May, a week after the draft, might have the best quarterback situation in the North. That's wild.
Yeah, hell must be freezing over right now.
Well, the Packer brass is in a no-win situation. They're in an absolute no-win situation on how to fix this, to take care of it. But, you know, hey, Rodgers knows what he's doing. He forced the hand of others. Some to select a quarterback, some to go, what if Rodgers isn't in the North? What do we do in our draft? It's a week now. How much longer will this go on? But everybody's speaking for Aaron. John Kuhn was the latest.
Yes.
Former Packers fullback.
Cool.
Everybody is running into Rodgers, except for Aaron's not anywhere.
Yeah.
I go back to something I posed to you earlier this week. Would this be different if the Packers had an owner? One particular person that was the owner.
It's a fantastic question.
Thank you. That's why I asked it. Coming up in 30 minutes, Omaha men's basketball coach Darren Hansen. We have not talked much with DH. We have not talked since the season ended. But what a roller coaster of emotions for Omaha men's basketball, culminating today with Cole Rope, the Creighton Prep star, transfer from Nebraska, is coming back to Omaha, and he has committed to playing for the Mavericks. DH joins us at noon. Local music throughout. We roll till 2. We'll get to some of your emails in the Equitable Bank inbox. Not much love for Angel Hernandez, and there shouldn't. That's Gary or George at 1620 The Zone.